From the campus of Winston-Salem State University, welcome to Future Focus Now, giving you great conversations with great guests from Winston-Salem State University and beyond. And now your host, WSSU Chancellor, Elwood L. Robinson.
On February 1, 2016, McCullough M. Abdullah became the 14th president of Virginia State University. In his remarks during his introduction to the Trojan family, President Abdullah outlined his four core beliefs. I believe in God. I believe in family. I believe in the transformative nature of education. I believe in Virginia State University. President Abdullah also emphasized several focus areas to sustain VSU as an 1890 land-grant university. The areas focused include providing a transformative experience for students, strategically investing in academic programs, partnering with others as a university to tell the VSU story, embracing the university's land-grant mission, and embracing VSU's role as Virginia's Opportunity University. Under President Abdullah's leadership, the university has experienced some significant achievements. The university had a significant increase in first-time enrollment, recognized as one of the nation's top 20 best colleges for African Americans by Essence Magazine. Opened the Academic Center of Excellence as a one-stop hub for the first-year students to receive career and academic advising and tutorial services. In June of 2018, VSU was named Best HBCU by HBCU Digest. In June of 2018, the university was named the HBCU of the Year and awarded the Best Board of Trustees of the Year and the Female Student of the Year by HBCU Digest, which is an online blog. Additionally, in 2017, President Abdullah was named the HBCU Male President of the Year. President Abdullah is an academic administrator committed to excellence. He is an internationally renowned educator, recognized for outstanding research. Prior to his appointment as president of Virginia State University, Dr. Abdullah served as provost and senior vice president at Bethune-Cookman University in Daytona Beach, Florida. Dr. Abdullah is a Chicago native. He earned his undergraduate degree from Howard University in civil engineering and his doctorate and master's degrees in civil engineering from Northwestern University. He is the youngest African-American to receive a PhD in engineering. In 2017, he was inducted into the Honda Campus All-Star Challenge Alumni Hall of Fame. He is a member of Alpha Phi Alpha Fraternity Incorporated. He's a supportive and loving and caring husband and father, and apparently has a basketball handle that puts Kyrie Irving and Stephen Curry to shame. Please welcome to Future Focus Now, my good friend, my colleague, Dr. McCullough Abdullah.
How you doing?
How you doing, brother?
I am doing great, man. How you doing? Welcome to the show. I see you got all your Virginia State stuff behind you. That's how you represent, Mr. President. You're on Future Focus Now. Welcome to the show. How you doing?
I'm doing fantastic. I figured I had to bring some extra VSU gear since I was hanging out at Winston-Salem State for a couple of minutes. So you'll forgive me for bringing all of my friends.
No. You need your friends, particularly when you're going up against, you know, Winston-Salem State University. We know how that goes. We'll get into that in just a little bit. Man, you know, interesting time of year, certainly to be a college president, but interesting time of year to be living in America under so many things happening. Just share with us, how are you doing with your family? I saw just a beautiful, beautiful post about your son on Facebook. It warmed my heart. You talked about you hadn't seen him for over a year during this pandemic. Just tell us how you're doing personally through this pandemic and all of these things.
Thank you, big brother. I appreciate that. We're doing well. We're staying isolated and staying safe as best we can. We've all been vaccinated at this point. One of the great things about the pandemic is my daughter moved back home. She had moved out when she graduated in 2019, but moved back to go to grad school at Virginia State. And so she's here, so we get a chance to spend time with her. But as you said, me and my wife, we were, you know, it's been tough. It's been a whole year. He lives in Atlanta. He's working on his PhD in biomedical sciences at Morehouse School of Medicine. And I hadn't seen him in over a year. And so I just I took my first trip in a year and had an extra layover in Atlanta. So I was able to stop off and see him. And man, it really was everything. You know, you forget the kind of things that I thought I was okay because I was seeing him on Zoom, but it's just not the same when you haven't seen family in a while. So I love my son. I love my daughter. I love my wife. And I'm very fortunate to have a wonderful family, my friend.
Absolutely, man. And I tell you, when I saw the Facebook post, it really did warm my heart. And I was just glad that you had the opportunity right recently to spend with your son. That was beautiful. So you know, you're president of Virginia State University. I should tell you, I have a great long history with Virginia State University. My wife's aunt, and one of her very favorite aunts, was the librarian at Virginia State University back in the late 70s. So we do have and we have cousins and certainly who've attended Virginia State University. But for those of us in our audience who don't know Virginia State, Mr. President, just take a few moments to tell our audience about Virginia State University.
Virginia State University is located just outside of Petersburg in the village of Ettrick, about 20 minutes south of Richmond, here in the Commonwealth of Virginia. Virginia State University was founded in 1882 as Virginia Collegiate and Normal Institute. And we're proud to be one of the first HBCUs to offer collegiate degrees as far back as 1882. We were the first institution in Virginia where men and women studied alongside of each other to get degrees. And of course, the first public institution in Virginia to offer degrees to African Americans. Virginia State has been a beacon of hope in Virginia, along with, of course, Virginia Union, Hampton, and Norfolk State University, who we like to call Little State because we birthed them out of Virginia State University. And they like to call us Little State because they are bigger than us, but they may be bigger, but we're older. And so they'll always be a Little State to us. But Virginia State's a wonderful place, just over 4,000 students here at VSU, sitting on about 200 some odd acres with beautiful, wonderful programs in education and engineering and social work, wonderful accredited programs in those areas. And of course, we're an 1890 land grant institution, which means we have the full complement of agriculture programs. We teach in ag. We also offer outreach in agriculture, and we do quite a bit of research in ag. And so, you know, it's just a wonderful place full of wonderful people. And I'm proud to be the 14th president of Virginia State University.
And if I may say, doing an excellent job. I follow your great leadership. I follow the way in which you interact with your students. We'll get into that in just a moment in terms of how your students treat me. But we'll talk about that a little bit later. I'm interested because on this show, we get a chance to feature a lot of things, certainly HBCUs. And, you know, we try to tell the HBCU story. They're these wonderful universities, these beautiful campuses and the great leadership. You've had a long and storied career in the HBCU world. When did you decide or think that you would become president? Because I want to get into presidential leadership. Yeah. And what drove you to want to become a college president, particularly HBCU college president?
Well, first I'll start with the HBCU part of that. I mean, it is in my blood from a very early age. And so I actually went to a boarding school for high school. And when I came out, I had scholarships to a number of fine institutions, fine PWIs. And I told my mother, I told her that I was going to go to one of these institutions because I had a full scholarship. And she said, I think you should really consider Howard University, she said. And I said, Mom, I don't think you understand. I said, I have a scholarship. I can go where I want. And she said, I don't think you understand, boy. She said, if you go anywhere but Howard University, I'm going to disown you. I won't buy you another pair of underwear. You won't get a plane ticket home. We won't come into this house. And so for that reason and others, I go to Howard University, and it was the best experience I ever had. I was a little immature as a student. I graduated high school early. I was 16. So I came to college as a young man, and I wasn't ready for everything. And the faculty and the staff really embraced me and gave me the kind of nurturing that I really needed at that time. Had I not gone to an HBCU, I would not be where I am today. And so it was, you know, you can't pay back the people who poured into you. So I always then wanted to pour into others. I wanted to do what my mentors did for me. And for me, that meant staying in college. And so I just never left. I went to grad school and then went back straight to university and started teaching. And my family will tell you that I always knew that I wanted to be a college president. Hmm. They may have recognized that in me, but I didn't recognize it in myself. I just wanted to be somewhere where I could make a difference. I was a faculty member. I taught four teaching loads. I graduated six master's degree students, four PhD students. Three of my PhD students are tenured at Research One institutions. I've published 25, 30 journal articles. I've had $5-6 million in single PI research. I mean, so I had a whole lab. I was doing the whole faculty thing and then just kind of stumbled into administration. I got offered a job and they said, you know, we'll pay you a bunch of money to do it. And I figured I could take the money. And if I didn't like the job, I could go back to being faculty. I can't lose. And from that day on, I started wearing suits. I didn't have my first suit, Elwood, until I was, 35 years old. I didn't own a suit until I was 35. I mean, that's how much of a faculty member I was. Right. And so now it's kind of just a part of, and then the progression just kind of kept moving and the opportunities presented themselves. And then in 2015, the opportunity to come to Virginia State opened up, and it's been the best decision I made.
Yeah. I mean, it's wonderful. You and I have never talked about this, and mm-hmm. I just find it interesting. And so much of not only our lives mirror one another, but the universities. I mean, you could literally put these two universities in a mirror in terms of where we are and how we approach things and how we lead. For example, we certainly have been in that same space, and that's good to hear. You, sir, are a scholar, and you are smart. You're brilliant. You make no bones about that, right?
That's correct.
You embrace that part.
I do.
Of who you are, right? And yeah. And why do you do that? I mean, that's I'm curious.
You know, I think it's important. I think it's important for people to know that you can embrace all of who you are, right? And so if it's intelligence, if it's athleticism. Whatever it is that you bring your full self to the table. And so I like bringing my full self to the table. And I also think it shows in our community, sometimes there are those who believe that being intelligent, that being smart, that sometimes that's not being Black. And I think it's important that as scholars, that we show that you can be, you are Black and you are smart. And that you can bring all of those things to the table, that you can teach and learn. And so, you know, it's just a part of who I am. I got to give credit to my mama because she's the one who really gave me that confidence to kind of be who I am. And I try to do the best at it. So,
yeah. And so one of the things, and I had on my show a couple months ago, Greg Carr. You may know Greg Carr at Howard. And he was talking about, you know, HBCU leadership and HBCU presidents. And he was talking about the importance of, you know, of scholarship and being in that space and how that's important for a president. That's why I wanted to ask you the question in terms of that you embrace that. You started out even as a student with the Honda All-Star Challenge.
Yeah.
Right. Talk a little bit about that. I found out that was a couple of 3 years ago. I found out that you and now you're in the Hall of Fame in the Honda All-Stars. Tell us a little bit about that.
We were on the first show. So when it premiered, I was on the first Howard University Honda Campus All-Star team. And we were blowing through the regionals, Jack. We were a good team. Me and my man, Dean, who I hope is watching, we were on that team. And we were really good. and we got not to the finals, but to the TV part of the show, and they changed the rules. You couldn't buzz in early. Man, we got spanked. As a matter of fact, on TV, I only answered one good question. The only reason they put me in the Honda Campus All-Star Hall of Fame is because I'm a president. They did not put me in the Hall of Fame for my performance. So I love to tell that story. You know, if you do well enough outside of the career, they'll honor you for things that you didn't do well. So I did not do that well, brother. But I love trivia, and so I love to compete whenever I can.
Well, I saw you put your name in the hat to do some trivia. Has that happened yet? I saw it on social media that you put it out there. Trivia challenge.
Yeah, it hasn't happened yet. I think it comes up in the next couple of weeks. But we did it last year, the first one on Zoom, and I got my butt kicked on that too. So I'm gonna be ready this time. I'm gonna be ready. You know, I'm not losing again. I got to represent the whole CIAA, man. We gotta get some wins here.
I got you. Look, let's talk about the work that you're doing at Virginia State, a little bit about student success.
Yeah.
And you, I saw, open up this student success center, a one-stop shop.
Yeah.
And you may or may not know, we did the same thing about a year earlier than when you open up. And that has paid huge dividends for us. I tell folks when they come on campus, it has been transformational in a sense that when I was in college, folks used to hang out, you know, the student center, the student union. If you come to Winston-Salem State University today, students hang out in the student success center because they get an opportunity to work in groups and they get an opportunity to get all their needs met in one place. And it really is a happening place. But why did you do that? And why was that important to your vision where you wanted to take Virginia State?
You know, the first part about it was really, and I think everybody knows the kind of what we call the HBCU shuffle. Right. Is that you go to one office and they say you got to go to another office, and you go to another office and they say you have to go to another office. And that's just really difficult, you know, customer service. And sometimes legitimately it's not the service provider's problem. Like the student legitimately came to the wrong office and they need to go somewhere else. And so I thought, how do we alleviate that challenge when students don't always know what they want? They don't always know what question they need to ask and who's the best person to answer the question. The best answer to me was to put them all in one place. And so when you talk about advising and tutoring and some level of career services and some part of orientation, to have all of that in one place. So if you have an academic need, you already know where to go and you don't have to go far to get your question answered. And so what we did is we took the library and we cleared the books off the second floor of the library. We put it in the library. And that was the other thing. We want to draw people back to the library, back to an academic study space, and create, as you said, try to create the library as a center of campus, the center of academics on campus. And I think it's just been phenomenal. It just makes it easier, let's say, for me to say, well, look, you know, if your problem is academic, go over to ACE, go over to our Academic Center for Excellence. You'll get an answer there, and I won't have to worry about whether you have to go all around campus to get those answers. And so for me, it really just started as a, you know, you look at, when I look at the people at Virginia State, you know, by and large, we got some incredible faculty and staff who are doing some incredible work. And so when you see a problem, like I don't immediately jump to the fact that, well, you know, we got a problem with our people, right? The reason why people are going all over campus is because our folks are directing them in the wrong direction. No, there's a system problem here. We've got things in different places. What happens if we put them together? And so I think it's really streamlined things and really helped to promote student success on campus. And so I'm really proud of it. Dr. Alexis Brooks Walter is now the interim director of ACE, and I think doing an incredible job. Our advisors are doing great work. I have to shout out my social media advisor, Ms. Felicia Bishop. One of my advisors is very active on social media and helps to draw people in and register folks on Twitter. And so I think it's important that, again, we provide a central place and we're able to reach students where they need us. So
I think that's beautiful in terms of being able to do that. When you thought about becoming a college president, did you have a model? Did you have something in the back of your mind that any kind of guiding principles and the kinds of things you wanted to do? We talk a lot and you hear people talk a lot about being an HBCU president. You talk to students and alumni at universities and they say, well, you know, I didn't really know who the president was. I didn't know who the chancellor was. That typically is not the case at most HBCUs. Most HBCUs, the president and chancellor is at the center of attention. And I'm wondering, one, did it surprise you when you became president? And then how have you used that in your own leadership style?
I tell you, I'll start with that part, the surprise part. Then I'll go to different models and mentors. I'm going to tell you what, it did. I knew that the HBCU president was kind of the center of campus, but I had been a provost. I'd been a vice president. I'd seen it work, right? But I was not prepared for the level of attention that the president gets above and beyond the vice president. It really is almost like going from a background singer to the lead singer and walking to the middle of the stage and everybody's looking. And don't get me wrong. I mean, I'm not in some ways, my personality is kind of built for that. Right. So it doesn't make me uncomfortable. But to be honest, I was not prepared. And I wasn't prepared for the fact that the light doesn't go off. I think that's right. The part I wasn't prepared for. So, you know, I'm OK when the lights are on. But I didn't know that it was really you're going to have to be on all the time. Whenever I leave campus, I represent Virginia State University. Whenever I do a podcast, I better have all my VSU stuff, you know, behind me. That I am the people can't talk to the building. So I'm the physical manifestation of Virginia State. People want to tell me their stories. They want to interact with me. And I was not I knew it intellectually. Right. But I didn't know what it was really going to be like. And it definitely is a change. And it's something that if your personality doesn't fit this, I can only imagine it's really, really, really difficult.
Right.
I think in terms of HBCU presence, I think the one that the one that's made the biggest impact on me was probably Fred Humphreys, president of Florida A&M. He hired me at FAMU, and he was kind of the first HBCU president that I got a chance to see and kind of interact with. And he was, first of all, I mean, shoot, that man is 6'5". He's larger than life. I am not larger than life. Right. But he was somebody who kind of first showed me one of those models. But then I've worked for some great folks. Edison O. Jackson, I worked for at Bethune-Cookman. James Ammons, who was the provost at FAMU and then became the president at FAMU. Henry Lewis, who was the president of Florida Memorial when I was at Florida Memorial. And others. I mean, I can name more. But there were a lot of Fred Gaines, who was president of Florida A&M. There were a lot of people who really took the time, even when I wasn't paying attention. I didn't know where I wanted to go. They were giving me advice and mentorship on the path when I didn't even know I was on the path.
Hmm.
So I really thank all of them for what they've done. And it's just I can listen back now at old lessons and hear them preparing me, you know, 5-10 years ago. And so I'm very blessed to have a lot of really good mentors and a lot of good presidents that I work for.
Yeah. You know, same here. And I think you use that and you take bits and pieces of that and you try to mold it into something unique and something that's uniquely you. You talked a lot about your personality. You also have to have your personality involved in that as well.
You know, let me interrupt you there, because this is the part where I was trying to figure out what I was going to throw you in. Right. And I've told you this before privately, but I haven't said it publicly to a lot of folks. You were one of my models when I came in. When I was in my first year and I was watching how presidents move, your style was probably the closest to mine. The people that I named, their styles really aren't as similar, but yours is. And I watched you from afar for a while to learn how to become more comfortable in my skin and be more of myself in the work. I remember specifically when I came down to Winston-Salem and there was a football game and you walked me down to the sidelines. And I was like, the president can go down on the side? I didn't even know. I said, we can do that, right? And you were like, yeah, sure, why not? And that was the first time that I started to really see that the presidency didn't have to be a model that someone else had, but that I could mold it more to fit, you know, who I was. And you really showed me that. And I've told you that in private, but I wanted to make sure that your constituency knows that I really value what you've done. And I look to you in some ways, in many ways, as a mentor and as a trailblazer. So I thank you. I thank you.
No, I appreciate that. Thank you so much for the great and kind words. Let's get into the CIAA, all right? Let's get into the CIAA for a little bit. So before we get into the CIAA, I got a couple things here behind me. And the first one you need to see is this.
What is it?
You might not can make that out. This is This is a CIAA men's basketball championship ring.
No, the resolution is bad. I can't really see it.
I know you can see it very clearly. I wanted you to be able to see that. But as we get into the CIAA, talk about your first year. Did you you won the championship in your first year, right?
Oh yeah, I got two rings. Yeah, 16 and 19. Yeah.
Yeah. So I mean, so one, just talk about what it's like being in the CIAA, and then we'll move very quickly into the tournament aspect of it, because that's where we have the most fun. Right. Yeah.
It is well, first of all, so I didn't grow up with the CIAA. So I had never been to a CIAA before I became president. That was my first CIAA, and I didn't know what the hype was about. And CIAA started 2-3 weeks after I started the job. So literally I came on campus February 1, I was on campus for, 2-3 weeks. And then I went straight down to Charlotte for the CIAA. And it was an incredible experience. And of course we had the best team that year. We won the championship, which is also another incredible experience. And it is interesting how many rookies win. I think, Peggy, at Fayetteville State, and then Hakeem at, Union also won as rookie. So we got a, that does happen for rookies, but it was just a wonderful experience. I love the CIAA. And I think that, as you say, for the presidents and for the engagement for us, one of the things that is so cool that I don't think a lot of people know is that we are all incredibly competitive. And just like you just showed me the ring, they don't know. We spend half of our meetings, half an hour of all of our meetings, talking about who won what and who didn't win and showing off our jewelry. So, I love that part of being a president in the CIAA, and I really enjoy it. I mean, I'm, of course, as you know, and I'm the chair of the board of directors, and it's weird now to be, I'm in my sixth year, whatever. And when I came, I was the rookie. This is 6 years ago, and now, me, you, and Jimmy Jenkins are the longest serving presidents in the CIAA. But it's a wonderful group of presidents. I don't know if people really know how well we get along and how much we enjoy each other's company, from Aminta to Dewan, and I don't want to even miss anybody, but everybody is just incredible.
Yeah,
I love it, man.
You know, and we look out for each other, and we think about each other, and our hearts not go out for Carrie, what's happening with Elizabeth City. She's down there. I text her just, recently just to see how she's doing, having to deal with so much. And because anytime we see one of us, an HBCU president, I mean, it is deep respect. It is respect right away. We know exactly what that person is going through. And that comes out a lot in the CIAA tournament when we have a chance to get together. And it's absolutely amazing. And so the idea of you and basketball, I wanted to bring up basketball because apparently you have some great basketball talent. I mean, I've never seen anything.
You can say that again. Great basketball talent. Say that one more time.
I've never seen anything like it, to tell you the truth. And so you created this video that we want to show our audience. And I want to tell you what happened as a result of this video. Can we get the video of can we play the video? one of the greatest videos of all time, my brother. Your great video. When I saw the video, I sent you a text and I said it didn't look authentic, and then you sent it back. I can neither confirm nor deny. so much of what happens at our institutions, and the students are just great. The students are amazing. And I was getting all of these messages on Twitter and Facebook. What you going to do? What you going to do, Chancellor? I'm not going to do anything. I'm an old man. I gave up on basketball about 10 years ago. So I'm not going to do anything. So I was forced, man, to respond, right? So I was forced to respond. Kent, can we show my response to the video?
Coach, I need to play a little bit, man.
Chancellor, look, it's a little hot in here. I know you haven't played in a while. Look, Don Lavender, our athletic trainer, is right over there. You can wait for him to come over.
No, I'm ready. I'm ready. Hey, look, this is what I'm going to do, man. I don't know if you saw this video with McCullough at Virginia State.
Yep, I saw it.
It looked like he got game, but I don't believe any of that. Okay. So I need to show people that I got game.
All right, well.
So what I want to do, if you'll allow me, I want to make a layup, free throw, three-point shot, then I want to dunk from the line.
You're ready.
I'm ready.
You're ready.
Okay. I'm ready.
You got the floor.
I'm ready. Let's do this.
Okay.
Let's do it.
I should tell you, I made the first three shots the first day.
I like the layup.
Hey, there we go.
The free throw looks really good too.
Hey.
Oh, wow. I still didn't know he could shoot like that.
Oh. That's for you, Virginia State and President Abdullah. That's how we do it at Winston-Salem State University, baby. Come out.
You saw I was all in, man. I was all, you see, I was sweating. It was hot.
Look, bro, let me tell you the two favorite things about that video. The first thing is that you were sweating by the end of it. That, to me, was a killer because that means you had to do some work to get it in. The second thing, though, is that kid said he didn't even stretch, though. I love right. it. I don't know if you know. Do you know where that line is from? Did they tell you?
Uh-uh. No.
So that's a line from another viral basketball video, right? D'Angelo Russell, when he was in high school, was watching Blake Griffin dunk. And when he dunked, he said he didn't even stretch, though. That's a callback to another viral video.
See, I didn't know that. See, you're educating me.
That's what I'm here for, brother. I'm here for you. But when I saw that video, I said that brother needs some. He needs some shoes. That's not the shoes I would have pulled out for him. So that's why I had to send you something different.
No, I appreciate the shoes. I got the shoes here too because I want folks to see the shoes. You got to see the shoes, right?
Red suede fives, man. That's what I'm talking. See, if you'd had those on in the video, see, you would have jumped a little higher. You would have been a little higher. I know,
and so they said, what are you going to do? I said, look, I don't have to do anything, but I will do something because it's a lot of fun. And I think that, and I did it for the students, and I did it for Virginia State. And you have been such a supporter of HBCUs and as quiet as it kept, I mean, people don't know you support Winston-Salem State University. You give during our giving day. You've done that for the last few years. And I certainly try to return the favor because I appreciate all the HBCUs and want to support as many as we can.
I believe in giving. One, I believe in you, right? I believe in my colleagues. I believe in our HBCUs. I believe in not taking yourself too seriously. I think that's the best thing about the video. The way for the young people to see that they can grow and be us is to be able to relate in a way that says, well, it's not impossible. You can make a silly basketball video and be an HBCU president. That means I can do that, right? So I think that's important. And I also really believe in giving. I really believe in giving. Last year I gave to 20 HBCUs. This year already so far I've given to 42. Wow. Trying to make it to 100 by the end of the year. Because I just think it's important. It's not enough for us as leaders and for the community to say we love HBCUs and we won't put our money behind it. You don't have to do 100, but man, everybody got to do at least one. Even if you didn't go to an HBCU, if you support HBCUs and you think they're valuable and you think that your children should have the choice of going to a PWI or an HBCU, if you think they should have the choice, then you have to support HBCUs.
Oh man, fantastic. Tell me a little bit about the group. This was the video. Is that some young men? I saw them being interviewed. So tell me about the students involved in that.
Man, great group of young people, man. They call themselves the Roommates. Afo Labi goes by Afo, and Devon who goes by Cobra, and Orlando, who goes by Lando, right? And they have been doing viral videos for a little over a year. And they have this knack. One, they're just talented, right? But second, the love that they have for each other and the love that they have for Virginia State, it comes out in their videos. And it's almost like, you know how when we were in school and you had great fun in college, you know, and you had those stories you can tell? They're capturing those stories in real time as students. And so this whole new thing of what is it like to meet your best friends on campus and then do silly things. Some of the things that they've gone viral for are not safe for work. Right. But most of it is. Right. And it's legitimately funny. And I was watching them. The students don't know, but I'm on social media and I search. I watch what they do. I don't always say I'm watching, but I watch. And after about two of the videos, I had to comment and tell them, you know, that I was proud of them and that I appreciated their hustle. And that's when they were like, you know, can we, you know, I asked them, is there a way we can work together? And so that was, you know, that was what you saw, you know. So, you know, I'm very proud of them. And I think the real story is their ability to be so talented that they can create, you know, content that people want to see. And I'm proud that they were honored enough that they think enough of their HBCU that they would include us in it and allow Virginia State University to get some shine. So, you know, much love to Afo, Cobra and Lando, and to the missing brother Reese, who graduated in December. But we love the roommates. The roommates at VSU. You want to follow somebody, follow Afo, if you are Afo on Twitter.
Oh, fantastic, man. I mean that's great. And we want to feature our students, and they're so talented, as you said. We got to tell the story. You talked earlier about storytellers. We have to tell that loud and clear, because if we don't, then someone else will make it up. And we don't want people to make it up. So shout out to those students that work with you on that. Before we leave the CIAA, a couple other things we want to get into before our time is up. But the CIAA, it spent so many years in Charlotte, and that was a staple. People knew it. We are now moving to Baltimore. And I think it's important that I have you on here, and we're talking about the CIAA. Talk about the move to Baltimore, what we can expect, because even today, and we have not, we've been there virtually, but we certainly have not been there physically. And so folks don't have a good idea about Baltimore and why we made that move.
Well, I think first I want to, you know, I can't talk about the CIAA without shouting out the best commissioner in the game, Commissioner Jackie McWilliams.
Absolutely.
Who really helped lead the board through a process of making sure that we could support the CIAA, support our student athletes at the highest level, right? And so I think there was some criteria. I know I'm going to say this wrong, and I have a feeling that Jackie is listening, so I'm sorry if I say this wrong. But when I try to quote her, she wanted to make sure that the students have a wonderful experience, that the fans have a wonderful experience, and that we're able to get resources to support our institutions. And so, you know, we had a whole RFP. We put it out for bid. We had cities come in and tell us what they wanted to do for the CIAA. And we're proud that at the end of the day that we decided to partner with Baltimore. We knew it was going to be a transition. There's so many folks who love it in Charlotte. I loved it in Charlotte. We know that so many of our schools are in North Carolina, and Charlotte was convenient. But we also felt that it was time to give the CIAA another look at another city. And it doesn't mean that we'll never be back. It means that, God willing, if we come back, that that we'll have even more love. But we're excited really to partner in Baltimore, and we're sad that we didn't have a tournament this year. You know, I really love basketball. Basketball is my favorite sport. I do like the way they dribble up and down the court. I just wanted to say that. So I do miss it. I miss the game. And so I'm excited for us to get back out next year and to have that friendly competition. It is one of the, going back to something you said about presidents earlier, one of the most difficult things about being a college president is, unlike being a vice president, there are no colleagues on campus, right? So there's nobody to kind of turn to and vent or share with. And so it's always a pleasure to kind of get in a room of my colleagues just to, you know, shoot the breeze and talk a little mess, you know. That's a lot of fun. And so I've missed that. We've done some of that virtually. But there's nothing like showing off rings in person, you know, because the resolution wasn't that good. So I couldn't see your ring on Zoom. I couldn't see it. But in person, it's hard not to see the tie. You know? And if you remember, I was sitting next to you during the game. And that was a heck of a game. I mean, that was a good game.
You know? No, that was one of the best games I've ever been a part of. And, man, it was a magical victory. And certainly we will accept that. But if people watched us on the sideline, you know, they saw how we were interacting. And actually, almost all during the tournament, you know, we kind of sat on the sideline and watched the games. And that's what has made it so very special. So I want to thank you guys for making that important. I lost it because I had not won. So you came in your first year and you had a championship. That's year five, year six for me. And I not won a championship. So it was great. You know, it was great for me to be a part of that. And I think I lost. I got lost in the crowd somewhere. I jumped in the crowd and was trying to celebrate. I didn't know what to do. I was running around like Jim Valvano, you know, at NC State. You know, where do I go? You know, who do I hug? Where?
No, I got spoiled. I mean, the first year, winning the championship the first year, you know, I had no idea that everybody does, you know, intellectually I did, but emotionally, I wasn't prepared the next year when we lost. I was like, wait a minute. I've got two rings, 16 and 19. We got the best coach in the CIAA, Coach Lonnie Blow. And we're coming back to get this thing next year. So I just wanted you to know that you can hold on to that ring for 2 years since we didn't have a tournament.
Got it. Still,
we're going to take it out next year.
Defending champs. Let me make sure I put the ring back on. you know, thanks for that. A couple things I want to get to. What we've seen, man, over the past couple years, certainly during the pandemic, is an increased interest in HBCUs, the spotlight being shined on HBCUs, a major philanthropy. I've talked to many people. I could ask you the same question. Did you ever expect to get a $30 million gift unrestricted from anyone? So the spotlight being shined on these institutions, interest in people wanting to come to HBCUs. When you sit back and reflect on that, what's happening and what's occurring? What's leading to this?
Yeah. I mean, I think, well, first of all, I think it's the current climate and culture in the world, the divisions that are in the world, the political differences that people have, the crazy rhetoric that people bring to the table, the rise of white supremacy in a more overt form. I mean, you think about it like this. I mean, when you started, and right when I first started, people were beginning to ask the question of, are HBCUs relevant, right? That was the, whenever you went on a podcast, you had to be ready to answer the question, are HBCUs relevant? And with the political situation, I'm not going to name any names because I don't believe that all the names deserve to be named all the time. I don't want to give them any more airtime. But there's some people who came on the scene and started to create this hyper division in the country that let people know that HBCUs were even more important than they used to be. That when you start talking about Black Lives Matter, that after the Civil War, during Reconstruction, when people were saying some of the same things about Black Lives Matter, the HBCUs were some of the first solutions to that, were the first answers to that question. So we've always been relevant. And as people started to understand how race still impacts the world, that HBCUs became even more relevant. I tell you that gift, that $30 million, man, look, I mean, look, I didn't, you know, if I'll be honest with you, because I mean, why not? Right. Right. Couldn't even have, before we received $30 million, I don't even think I could have fixed my face to ask for $30 million.
Exactly.
You know, I mean, we received the biggest gift that we've ever received before that, 3 weeks before. 3 weeks before, we got a gift for $2.75 million from Dominion. And thank you to Dominion. Very excited about that. So just to give you an idea, like, that was our biggest gift. And then the next biggest gift was $30 million. But we're really appreciative to Mackenzie Scott and all of the donors who have given this year. Some have given big amounts and some have given small amounts. Some have been anonymous and some have been not anonymous. Some have been alums and some have been not alums. Yeah. But those who have kind of come out of their pocket in these very difficult times and said that we are relevant today and we are relevant tomorrow, and that they want to keep us going for the future because of the opportunities that we give to students that go on to do incredible things. And so I'm honored to lead. I'm honored to lead for such a time as this, You know, I hope that it continues. HBCUs have always been relevant. The fact that people understand that now is great, but they never have not been relevant, and they've always been important as we advance the agenda of America and of Black America.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and the same thing happened to us in terms of giving. We received the largest gift the week before. Right. We got the Mackenzie Scott gift, which is really quite interesting when you think about that. I have to get into an area with you because I'm very excited about. We're starting our strategic planning process at the university. We just ended a 5-year plan that paid huge dividends for the university. Now we're thinking about what's next. But one of the key hallmarks of the next plan is really going to be how do we embed diversity and inclusion into almost every single thing that we do. And what you have done, and I'm very, very, I think, proud of what you guys have done at Virginia State University around this. But I want you to talk about the work that you have done there. I want you to talk a little bit about your center and why it was important for you to get in that space.
Well, I tell you, we have, and I have to give credit where credit is due. We have a wonderful staff member who's been helping to lead this effort. Her name is Chevelle Moss Savage, who is doing incredible work at Virginia State University for LGBTQIA diversity and inclusion before I got to VSU. And if I did anything, what I did was I allowed our champions who are serious about the work to be even more serious about it. I firmly believe that the only way to generate the best accountants, doctors, lawyers, engineers, is to allow them the freedom to be themselves so that they can study, so they can get all the information they need to be the best professionals that they can. And that's what I believe, and that's what Virginia State University believes. And so we want to be as inclusive to all students who want to be a part of the Virginia State University family and want to learn and get a degree so that they can change their lives. And so we have a presidential working group on LGBTQIA initiatives. We've written an article. We've got some inclusive language on our applications. We have what is it called? Something 101, safe zone training that we offer to all of our faculty and staff, and some training that is mandatory for some staff who come into great contact with students so that they can be prepared. What I try to tell my faculty and staff and my students is I'm not telling anyone what to believe. Right? What you believe is your choice, and it's important that you own who you are. But I am saying how I want people to behave. I want to make sure that if a gay student, if a lesbian student, if a transgender student is coming on campus, that we make that environment most comfortable for them to learn the information they need to so that they can be the most successful professional that they can be. Who they decide to be, that's their choice. How we choose to support that, that's ours. And I think that we've got to do that. And to be honest, it's also self-enlightened best interest, right? If we can have a campus that is inclusive for all students, because the students, to be honest, the students are already there. They don't have any problems. They have lost many of their hangups. Most of the hangups are most of us as the older folks. The faster that we can get our faculty and staff around this challenge and our systems in terms of preferred names and preferred pronouns, as soon as we can get our campuses around that problem, then we'll be open to educate even more students who want to change their lives. And so I want a student who's a Black student, African-American student that wants to attend an HBCU. I don't want them to have to choose between what they may believe is their sexual identity or their gay orientation and their Blackness. I want them to choose both. And I want them to come to Virginia State.
Oh, man, beautiful and beautiful said. I mean, and you guys are doing great work. Talk to me just a little bit about how that's being received by your constituencies and how have you been able to introduce it in a way that folks could receive it. And it's obvious that you've done that.
Well, I tell you, I think it's a challenge. I would be remiss if I said that it was easy. You know, it's not. I think that the thing that I think we all try to lean back on that helps is that we all really love. I mean, you don't get into higher education without loving the students. You don't. You know, I mean, we don't always think they're doing all the right stuff, right? But you love them. And so I think as we begin to have students tell the story, to help give them their voices so they can also, you know, be the advocates that we know that they can be. I was fortunate because when I came to campus and I met with the group, The first thing they said is, we want gender neutral bathrooms. And I said, well, what does that take? And they said it takes some signs. And I said, okay. I mean, that was literally the thing I did the second week, right? And so I think in some ways, inadvertently, I don't think I planned it that way, but early on in my tenure, I kind of planted the seed that I was very open to diversity and inclusion. And I think that helped campus. But it is a, you know, it continues to be a challenge. It is a difficult conversation to have in our community. And I just want the faculty staff and the students to know that I'm willing to have that conversation. And the same is true. You know, we think about it for the students, but in terms of diversity and inclusion, it's also true for our faculty and staff. You know, how do we make sure that our faculty and staff who may be gay, lesbian, or transgender, how do they make sure they feel comfortable on our campus so they can deliver the comfort is so that they can deliver the information in the best way and the students can get it. And that's what we want. So I just try to tie it back to what our real objective is. We want our students to meet their student learning outcomes. To do that, the reason why we have a cafeteria on campus is not because we like serving food, but because if the students don't have to go somewhere else to get food, they can spend more time studying. That's the reason why we have dormitories, right? Everything is geared towards student learning outcomes. And so when I tie it to that, I think it makes it a better conversation to have.
Well, great work, my brother. Hats off to you. That's some fine work. I mean, it looks like we've been locked up for a year and a half now, right? Quickly, lessons learned during this pandemic?
Lessons learned. It's been the biggest leadership lesson that I've ever dealt with. I mean, you sat around the table with us when we were thinking about what we were going to do with the CIAA in football. To be one of the first conferences, I believe maybe the first conference in the country, to decide that we weren't going to play football. To lead like that, knowing what that decision was going to mean for our communities, that football is so important on campus, to be able to make the very, very difficult decisions that we all had to make. It was hard, man. It was really hard. I mean, and it made me stronger. It made me better. It made me lean on my colleagues more. It made me care more about the institution. But brother, it's been hard from jump, every last one of them. As you know, we're all right now dealing with, and we haven't made a decision yet. I don't know if you have, but the next question becomes, what about the vaccine? Are you going to mandate it on campus? And that's something that we're having a conversation on campus about that, right? And all of these decisions are, you know, most of the decisions that we made before COVID, they weren't life and death decisions.
That's right.
Right? They weren't life and death decisions. As a matter of fact, there were things we didn't even think we could do. I didn't know you could cancel homecoming. So many things we did, even sending the students home 3 weeks before the semester is over. Right? I didn't know you could do that. Right? So it's been a heck of a ride. And I think for all of us who have led during the pandemic, I don't think there's any of us who haven't come out stronger and better leaders. And how should I say this? More confident, right? But simultaneously also more transparent in what you don't know.
Sure.
And able to communicate that. Like I can tell, I don't think I would have said this last year. Like we're studying this, whether we're going to mandate the vaccine, and we're not sure. Right. I'm not, you know, and to have the confidence to be able to say it like that, to really rely on the team, know I'm going to talk to my students, my faculty, my staff, my board, and make the best decision for Virginia State in the true sense of shared governance. I think that's the other thing. It's taught me the importance of shared governance. Shared governance as it relates to the pandemic has worked. It's really worked. We've had the faculty and the staff and the students at the table at every decision, and that has paid incredible dividends on our ability to execute. So I'm a better man. I'm a better president from COVID. But on the same side, I haven't seen you in over a year in person.
I hadn't thought about that. You have to be right.
I haven't seen Jack. I haven't seen anybody in CIAA in a year. I haven't seen a basketball team play in a year. So I'm ready for this COVID stuff to be over. So everybody get vaccinated. Let's get herd immunity. Let's get back out there.
I agree with you. I'm going to get you out of here on a couple of things. Tell us about your graduation plans.
Yes.
And then what are you looking forward to the most? Let's be hopeful. Let's be optimistic that things are going to get back close to normal. Tell graduation plans. What are you looking forward to the most in the fall?
Graduation, we are outside at Rogers Stadium. I'm embarrassed to tell you it's either on the 23rd or the 24th of May, but I know my students have already looked it up, and we're very excited to have an outdoor commencement. And what do I look forward for? Man, our universities, they're not the buildings. They're not the campuses. They are the people. I'm looking forward to being back at Virginia State with the faculty, staff, students, alumni, supporters, and friends and parents of VSU. That'll make me most happy. So I'm excited about that.
Well said, my brother. It's been a great, great conversation. Man, this has been a great Future Focus. Now, I thank you for joining me. It's good to see you. And I look forward to we can break bread again together and have great conversations.
Yes, sir. My man.
Yeah. See, I told y'all, you didn't believe me. I told you this is going to be a great show. He's going to be a great guest. And then please join us next week for another great Future Focus Now.